As you put a sermon together, try to capture the emotion of your text. That's our key sentence for today, and we welcome you to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. We're talking, as we always do, with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, I'm curious, on the Myers-Briggs type indicator, which comes out stronger for you, your head or your heart?
If push comes to shove, does your head dominate or your heart dominate? And I always come out, my head dominates. However, I would be quick to add, that doesn't mean I am an emotionless person. It's just saying that probably my head is going to dominate over my heart. And not always, but for the most part, that's how I'm wired. Now, why did you ask me?
Well, I was curious how that translates over into your sermon preparation and then ultimately your preaching. In your preaching, does your head dominate or your heart?
I think most people would say that my head dominates, but I would hope that they would also say his heart comes pretty quick behind, because I don't want it just to be a mental thing. I can give you a good illustration. I was in a service the other day. It was on the text of the Transfiguration. It was actually Transfiguration Sunday. And when the sermon was finished, it was a man I had not heard preach before. It was all head. Okay, so everything that happened was explained and there were lessons that were drawn out of it, everything. But that's an incredibly emotional text. That's John with Peter and James, and they're on the mount with Jesus, and they are absolutely overwhelmed by what is going on. In fact, it says they fell face down on the ground, terrified. I mean, they were scared spitless. Then later, John has that same experience in the first chapter of Revelation, where he talks about this figure visiting him while he is on the island of Patmos. It says, I fell at his feet as though dead. So this is a dreaded scene that has happened, because it is so beyond what is human that they have just been rocked to the very core. And at the end of the sermon, there was none of that emotion that was felt. It all remained in, this is what happened. You know, it's kind of like we lay this thing out paragraph by paragraph, but we lost the feeling that was going on.
It was purely an intellectual exercise.
That's a fair statement. And how in the world one could preach that passage, either of those passages, the one in the gospel or the one in Revelation, without somehow trying to get the congregation to feel that, man alive, my heart just went right up into my mouth, because this is beyond anything you can possibly imagine. You know, he was shining like the bright sun at noonday. I heard this voice come that was like the thunderous waters. And if you get all of that and don't somehow help people to feel it, then something's wrong. So you've led me down a path here, Dean. I want to say my emotion is coming out a little bit anyway, right?
Your emotion is definitely coming out.
Okay.
If you were advising pastors as to how to get the emotion of the text into their preaching, how would you go about doing that? What would you suggest that pastors do as they prepare their sermons?
Well, I would guess that bodily, you could ask them, have you ever been just literally so struck down by something that you just fell flat with your face to the floor? And I would say, in my experience, I probably can't even relate to that. So I probably would ask those who wanted to get up and actually just throw themselves on the floor and put their face down and think, okay, what am I feeling? And there would be a feeling sense, at least at that time. I would have to think through whether I would actually ask that. I remember doing a sermon on how when you're issued into a king's presence, you need to kneel. And I said, you can't possibly understand what I'm talking about until you do it. So I want you to get up from where you are, find an aisle, whatever. There's a lot of room around here. And I want you to just go down to one knee, and it's like you're coming before a great king. And to be in his presence, you bow, and that says, you're the one in charge, I'm not. You're the king, I'm the servant. You have all the authority, I don't have any of the authority. And I was trying to say to them, that's what you do when you come to Jesus. Now, Jesus is not sitting on a throne, he's on a cross. But basically, you bow before him, and that image of bowing gives you at least the emotional feel of what has to happen when you understand fully that you're coming before a great king who's dying for you, obviously. So I guess in some way I'd try to get them to feel that bodily. And I'm not sure you could do that without in some way actually involving your body. But basically that means, and I know some people aren't going to do it, but even watching someone do it would somehow capture the emotion that is included in this passage, where these disciples are just absolutely overwhelmed. Oh, my goodness, because of who this person is. They've been walking with this person. So if I'm walking with you and all of a sudden we go up on top of a mountain and then you are glowing, I mean, something's different about you. There is this transfiguring of what is taking place, and I see your face just glowing. I mean, I think, who is this person? You know, and then you hear the voice, and you go down. Well, at that point now, we're starting to get a feel of what went on in that passage, because there was a need for God to reveal to these people who his son was, and also to affirm his son in terms of the job he was doing as far as representing him on his earthly pilgrimage here. If I miss all of that, I miss what Transfiguration Sunday is all about. And because it's fresh with me, that was one of those Sundays where I thought, well, we miss the emotion of what's going on here. Or we're preaching John chapter 1, but we miss the awareness of what's going on, because John's saying, this is not my book. It's not my revelation. This is the one who revealed these things to me. And because they were so overwhelming, he didn't do it with words. He did it with images. And those images they were beyond anything I'd ever experienced before. They frightened the daylights out of me. So somehow to capture that emotion. So as an ENTJ on the Myers-Briggs, I still have to be able to say, let me work on your feelings a bit here. Because if I don't, the whole of what's going on in Revelation is missed. Because Revelation is like these phenomenal pictures. It's not for the person to figure out and say, now, did this come before this or that before that? It's just somehow you're just, oh my goodness, this is wild. Revelation is like a series of, I've said to people, it's like seeing impressionist painters or almost surrealism, because you're seeing the pictures and John very accurately describes what the pictures are. But if you don't get the emotion of the picture and you just try to figure it out with prophecy charts, you're attacking Revelation in the way it really shouldn't be attacked, because you're trying to get this sense that there is true evil, but there is also this overwhelming sense of control that God has, and that he's the one who eventually people are going to bow before, and that he's the one who will bring justice to the world and so on. So there is this emotion of, oh man, this is not good, but at the same time, I don't want to be on the wrong side. I want to be on God's side, and I want to be faithful to him, and he's going to make everything right. I don't want to step out of bounds here. How do you capture the emotion? That's the big question. So, okay, you got to keep them both in mind.
You got to keep them both in mind. That becomes the bottom line, isn't it, really? Mm-hmm. Yes, preparing a sermon has an intellectual aspect to it, but it also has an emotional aspect to it.
You know, it's interesting, too, when I say that emotion. Peter, who was a part of that scene as well, he says way, way later when he writes his second epistle, he says, we were eyewitnesses of, do you remember what the word is? We were eyewitnesses of his majesty on the mount. I mean, he was still feeling what went on from that time at the Transfiguration. So, and I think that, Dean, if I say this, that's not the only passage. That's the one that's most relevant in my mind, because it wasn't that long ago that I experienced it. I thought as I went away from church, the greatness of that experience somehow didn't come out in the service. I think that happens when people preach about Daniel in the lion's den. Somehow we didn't get the roar and the growl and all the rest of it. Or David and Goliath, somehow you got to feel what is going on. Elijah and the fire that came down from heaven, and Peter being delivered from prison by the angel. I mean, that is a wild night. You know, the angel comes, he's not even sure. He's thinking he's dreaming. But they walk through, the locks fall away and so on. And it's because the people are praying for Peter. In fact, the people even praying think that didn't happen. It couldn't happen, you know. But somehow just the overwhelming feelings that are going on, how to capture those, it's a hard thing for a minister.
Telling a story often has the opportunity for wrapping that story in the emotion of the story. And we've talked before about using storytelling as a mechanism in sermon preparation and sermon delivery. And here's an opportunity to use storytelling as a way of conveying emotion.
Yeah. Can it get out of hand? Of course it can. Can it be incredibly effective? Of course it can. So you don't avoid the emotion because you're afraid of an excess. Guys like me need to be reminded of the feelings. Some people who are the heart dominate need to be reminded of the mental part. But how do we keep the balance? That's the key thing.
Yeah, keeping the balance. As you put a sermon together, try to capture the emotion of your text. We're very glad that you joined us for our SermonCoach.com podcast for today. You found it at our website, SermonCoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. We invite you to explore those resources and use them in your own ministry. And we invite you to join us again for our next SermonCoach.com podcast.